Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on the conversation via Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. So the Giants made it official. They have added a few new faces. They have acquired Alec Ogletree, the linebacker from the L.A. Rams, for a pair of draft picks. They signed former Panthers running back Jonathan Stewart, as well as former Panthers corner Teddy Williams. We'll get into all three of those players in a little bit, but right off the top, we are joined by a very special guest to help us break down the acquisition of Alec Ogletree, and that is former NFL head coach with the Arizona Cardinals. He was the assistant head coach of the St. Louis and L.A. Rams from 2012 to 2016 when Alec Ogletree was a member of the Rams, and he's also currently the Tennessee Titans color radio analyst, and that is Dave McGinnis. Dave, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Guys, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Our pleasure to have you aboard. And, Coach, let's start right off the top with Alec Ogletree. You saw him as a rookie when he came into the league in 2013 when the Rams drafted him. What jumps out to you about his play, and what do you think he's going to bring to the New York Giants?
You know what, was involved quite a bit in the acquisition of Tree. You know, when he was coming out of the University of Georgia, I mean, we were looking to fortify the line, you know, the entire defense when we took that place over there in St. Louis, because they had been, you know, I think 15-65 the previous 5 years before we had taken that thing over. We were looking for playmakers on defense. And, you know, Tree was one of the guys that really stood out when we were evaluating his college film out of Georgia. He originally came into Georgia as a safety. And I tell you that just to know that this is a really, really athletic player. And when we went in there to Georgia and we watched his tape and then went down to his pro day, and then once the draft started, you know, we felt like that we had a first round talent. He fell down to the 30th pick in the first round. We felt like we had waited long enough. And when we took him, he was an immediate starter. We started him on the outside because at the time we had James Laurinaitis, you know, that was still playing inside. But when we took him, you know, we realized what we had. And the one of the first things that we did when we brought him in there, you know, I was involved. I had coached, you know, in with the Titans with Jeff Fisher for 8 years. We had Keith Bullock there with us, you know, who was a really, really good linebacker. Had a lot of the same skill sets as far as speed and range that Tree did. We brought Keith in during training camp just to try to, you know, to mentor, you know, Alec a little bit, get him involved a little bit in the system, because we were playing the same system. I tell you what, I could not have been more impressed with the way that Alec Ogletree, you know, not only gathered the information he was getting from the coaches, but was really, I mean, he is a gym rat as far as football goes. He's a first in, last out guy, and he got progressively better and better. And then when we moved him to the middle, I mean, he became the captain of that defense for us, not only calling the plays, but, guys, I mean, he's going to be an extension of Betcher on the field, because this guy loves football. And I cannot, you know, I've been fortunate enough in my 31-year NFL coaching career. I mean, I was with Mike Singletary and Otis Wilson and Wilbur Marshall, and then had Ron Rivera. I mean, I've coached some really good linebackers, you know, in my years coaching in this league. Alec Ogletree, you know, I've always very, very impressed with him. He's one of my favorite, and he's still a very young player. He's an experienced young player. I think the Giants did a great job of trading for Tree. He will fit right in, and you've got an immediate starter that's a three-down player that also really, really loves football. He'll be a leader on that football team.
Well, Coach, your affection for him as a player is obvious, so this is what I'm going to ask you. When you guys were thinking about taking him, and everybody knows that every prospect, when they come out of college, has some questions, some warts, some potential weaknesses, some things that have to be developed that you have to be able to project if he's going to be able to play at the level you need him to if you pick him. So what were some of the questions or the doubts about him as a player, and how did he erase them and improve over the course of time that you were with him?
You know, when we were watching him on tape, you know, at Georgia, he was really a run and hit linebacker. I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of reading going on behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, they blitzed him a lot. You know, but what you could see, in other words, there was not a whole lot of refined reading behind the line of scrimmage,
okay.
and there was not a whole lot of hand usage. I mean, he was using his athletic ability. He was more of a slip and slide linebacker in college. You know, he was a big, strong physical player, but he wasn't using that. And that happens a lot because of the way the game has spread out so much horizontally, you know, in the college game right now, especially at off the ball linebacker positions. So when he came in there, and again, that was one of the reasons, you know, that we brought Keith Bullock in when we had him early is to emphasize to him, and he had to learn how to use his hands. He had to learn how to read the guard ball triangle. He had to learn how to discern between run pass conflicts rather than just taking off at the first thing that he saw. But he's a really, really good student of the game. We knew with the athletic ability, and also once we went down there, myself and Frank Bush, who was our linebacker coach at the time, went down there and vetted him, spent a lot of time with him. And then when you get him in a classroom and you get him on a day-to-day basis, you know, and you guys know, you've been doing this a long time up there, there's a lot more to being a professional football player than just getting paid. Alec Ogletree is a pro, and he works on his craft, and he has gotten better. He has gotten better every season, and I could see him get better every offseason. He works. And he works on the things that he doesn't get right. He really wants to concentrate on work on those, because also the time he was there, we brought Mike Singletary in too, you know, as a defensive assistant with us, and he spent time with Tree, and Mike was also very impressed with him, and not only impressed with his physical ability, guys, but the work ethic. And that's what's so important, especially when you're trading for guys in this league. You need to know what they're going to be like. I mean, anybody can take a film and look and see how a guy plays, but you need to know how he's going to function day to day in your building. They've got a guy that is a professional. This was a good get for them. But looking at him early on, I mean, we had to teach him there was a lot more to playing linebacker in the National Football League than just running to the football.
Talking with former assistant head coach for the St. Louis LA Rams, Dave McGinnis, who was with the team from 2012 to 2016. Alec Ogletree was with the team from 13 to 16 while McGinnis was there. You mentioned in 16, Coach, you moved him from the weak side inside, and I know Greg Williams, who was the defensive coordinator, ran a 4-3. We're under the assumption that James Betcher, the new defensive coordinator for the Giants, is going to run a 3-4. I know Wade Phillips ran a 3-4 with the Rams last year as well. How does his skill set adjust from a 4-3 to a 3-4? Does it really make a difference given what he brings to the table?
Well, I think he'll do just fine. And again, I know what, you know, James runs there too. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time in this league. I'm very familiar with the multiple fronts that he's going to use. You know, three, and again, as you guys well know, I mean, you know, about 60% of our game now in this league is played with, you know, facing three wide-out sets. And you want backers off the line that can not only read that guard ball triangle and still be physical enough to get downhill if somebody does put a lead blocker on you, you know, in those first and second down situations where you put your linebackers in run pass conflicts. You also want somebody that can cover, and somebody that can not only cover man-to-man, and I'm talking about tight ends and being able to match up with those backs, you know, that come out, you know, when people come out in three wide, one back, one tight end sets, but also somebody that can cover some ground and make a difference in zone defenses. And whether you're playing a 3-4 or a 4-3, a lot of those things are still the same skill sets that you need. Alec Ogletree can do both of those things. And as I say, to me, he's a prototypical inside backer, but he can cover. He's a three-down guy that is also physical enough to play the run. He's a violent football player. He's got a great propensity to be able to create turnovers. You know, I really like him. As I said, once I saw that trade was made, and again, you know, the Rams are doing what they have to do too. They did a wonderful job this year of flipping that offense, and Wade has always done a great job with his defense. But, you know, they've got some salary cap issues that they needed to work on too. And I don't think it is any, you know, condemnation at all of Tree's ability. I mean, this league, as you guys well know, I mean, you have to fit caps and all these types of things. You guys have got a very, very good player there with the Giants, I promise you.
Dave, let me ask you something a little bit off the board, because we've been talking about Ogletree, but obviously you know who Janoris Jenkins is. He came to the Giants, initially had a terrific season his first year here, and then last year wasn't quite the same for a lot of guys on this team, especially on defense. What was your take from afar in how you watched him have that explosive first year where the Giants, I think he was an all-NFL selection. I think maybe he had been second-team all-NFL selection, and then had some struggles. What would be your take on what you've seen? What would you tell Janoris Jenkins about how to kind of, you know, clean up some of the suspect play last year?
Well, you know what? I mean, I really didn't study what Jack Rabbit did last year. All I know is when we drafted him here, I mean, he's one of the best pure cover corners that I've been around. And again, I mean, I've been around a few of them. I mean, I had Aeneas Williams, mm-hmm. you know, when I was a defensive coordinator and a head coach there in Arizona. And again, after doing this for 31 years, I've been around. Janoris Jenkins is one of the best pure man-to-man covers in this league. I have no idea. Guys, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you about what went on last year as far as the fall off of the defensive performance and Janoris's performance in particular. I do know this, that when we lost Janoris Jenkins off of this defense here in L.A., you know, we lost Janoris Jenkins and we lost Rodney McLeod, the safety that is, you know, the Super Bowl champion safety now for the Philadelphia Eagles. That really hurt this defense. That hurt the Rams defense when they lost those two players. Good corners and corners that can cover man-to-man and can turn the ball over are very, very hard to find in this league. Janoris Jenkins is one of the better pure man-to-man coverage cornerbacks in this league. I don't know what the fall-off was last year. He's still a young player. I mean, I'm still a big Janoris Jenkins fan because the Janoris Jenkins that we had here, we hated to lose him. It hurt the Rams defense when Janoris Jenkins and Rodney McLeod left.
All right, final big picture question for me, Coach. That is, you've talked a little bit earlier about James Betcher. You know him. You know what he likes to run. I know you're a defensive guru, well-respected in this league for decades. So let me ask you, if you can tell us, the folks here in New York, what do we expect to see from a James Betcher defense, and which players, and you've already mentioned Ogletree being a key member, which players are the most important players in the kinds of things he likes to do? Because from what I could see, it's a very fluid defense. You've got guys playing all different positions, showing all kinds of looks, and because of that, it can really be a nightmare for an offensive coordinator.
Well, it really is. And what James has done, I mean, he's a really good defensive coordinator in this league, and he's got a real diversified front. He's got some diversified fronts that he's going to bring pressure from a lot of different areas. Your players have to be pretty malleable. They have to be able, you know, the pieces that he had there at Arizona when they were rolling, the things that you have to do, you have to have guys that can be multifaceted as far as being able to be legitimate blitz threats when they line up in positions where they look like they might be bringing pressure with him. He's going to show you a lot of different things, but really what you see from him, you know, it's a very diversified front, and it's a pretty simplified coverage, but from a lot of different looks. And he needs people that can be able to play man to man. But what I was always impressed with, and of course, you know, we played them, you know, quite a bit. And of course, I have a history there with Arizona.
Sure.
So I know those people. And so the thing that really impressed me about his defense is he was able to bring, it's a lot like these offenses that kind of run the same plays, but they give you a lot of different looks. So you never really can tell what's coming. He's able to bring a lot of pressure, whether it's four from the strong side, four from the weak side, or four from up the middle, but he does it with different people, with different looks, and also with different personnel groupings. He's a very diversified front guy, and he's gonna make it hard on people when they are studying and breaking film down, and also trying to categorize what he's doing. He gives his defense a chance to make big plays because he gets one-on-one matchups pretty easily with his blitz packages. I really like what he does defensively.
Well, and that's why adding an opportunistic player like Alec Ogletree should certainly help, as you alluded to, Dave. Final question from me, and you hinted at this earlier when you talked about his leadership characteristics, Ogletree, and when Dave Gettleman in the press release announcing the trade referred to him as a defensive quarterback, I think that relates to what you were saying. But I think what's interesting, Dave, is when Alec Ogletree was on the Rams and James Laurinaitis left, you still had a relatively young linebacking core, and you know he had to make the transition to being a more vocal leader and a guy that's going to mentor the other linebackers. And the Giants have a relatively young linebacking core too, with a number of free agents. You know, what type of a role do you think he will have in this Giants locker room as a vocal leader? What is he going to bring to the table with respect to that?
Well, he's going to garner respect just because of the way he works. I mean, and again, guys, I keep saying, you know, in my coaching career in this league, which was, you know, 31 years, I was really blessed with some great players that I was around, but with Mike Singletary's and the Ron Rivera's, and you know, I was on football teams with, you know, Aeneas Williams, those types of guys, their leadership comes from the things they do day in and day out. It's not so much of what they say, it's what they do, and then what they back up, and then what they say means something to the other players in the locker room. You know, that when and you're right, when Tree was here, the Rams, When we were at the Rams, they were the youngest football team in the league for about 5 years in a row. Mm-hmm. So he had to grow up very quickly. He's still a young player, but yeah, he's a young player that's got a lot of experience. And I promise you, once you guys start talking to him and you see that his presence in the locker room, he's not a real loud rah-rah guy, but he is a real guy behind the line of scrimmage. And when he gets – and you will see during the OTAs, and they'll get to start early because they've got, you know, new coach. When they start with those OTAs, people in that locker room will gravitate towards him because he really does what he says he's going to do. He's an impressive individual to be around, especially work ethic-wise. And so Gettleman's right. He's got the quarterback, and a lot of times the quarterback of your offense or your defense doesn't have to be the loudest guy. He just has to be the most meaningful guy.
Dave McGinnis, former assistant head coach of the Rams from 2012 to 2016. He coached Alec Ogletree, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Dave, when the Titans come to town this season, we're going to have to talk a little Tennessee Titans football with you.
Absolutely.
No, guys, that's perfect. I don't know a whole lot of football, so it won't be very long coming.
Dave, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Guys, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Dave McGinnis, once again, here on Giants.com. Very complimentary of Alec Ogletree. A lot of characteristics that we have seen him showcase with the Rams, he thinks is going to translate very nicely to the Giants here.
You see, one of the things I take away from those comments, and it has to do with the fact that the gentleman, I mean, everybody knows who he is in this league. I mean, as he said, 31 years in the league. When you have that kind of resume and that kind of pedigree, and then you start naming a cluster of five or six guys who are your favorite guys, think of how many players he's come into contact with.
Yeah.
Right?
You're talking about a coach, Paul, that started in the National Football League going back to the 1986 Bears.
Okay. So when you start doing the math, and then you realize that he's got like five or six guys who are his all-time favorites – can you get a better recommendation about a player to when he's been separated from like 98% of the rest of the guys that this coach has come into contact with? I mean, that to me is what carries a lot of weight. It's not just what he said, but when you consider the amount of experience and people that Dave McGinnis has been around, and he still thinks that highly of this guy to make him an elite member of his favorite group of players, it emphasizes everything he said about 10 times over.
Well, and it's important to note, Paul, Dave McGinnis, I mean, his M.O. is linebackers because he was a linebackers coach. That's what he started.
That's his core.
Correct. Just because he was the title assistant head coach with the Rams didn't mean that he didn't work with the linebackers or had an influence on that side of the football at that position. And I thought it was interesting that he mentioned when the Rams were thinking about drafting him in 2013, you know, he gave his 2 cents on that because obviously he knows linebackers. And Ogletree, and he brought this up, if you go back to his playing days at Georgia, he was so versatile, Paul, they actually used him as a safety, too. I mean, yeah, they moved him around all over the place.
I remember there being a medical question about a knee injury when he was in college, and apparently he passed all the medical tests for the combine, so that never got held against him when he was then available for drafting. But clearly, as McGinnis had said, it was a matter of he's going to have to learn the pro game. Because he was getting by on pure talent at Georgia, yeah, if I can paraphrase. And they had to teach him about some of the formations and how to shed blocks and how to deal with a bunch of these kinds of things that you're going to see in the NFL that you don't get in college. And apparently a great student and was willing to learn. He himself said the Rams pretty much salary cap issue. It wasn't that they, you know, they had any other reason to shed the player. But everybody does, at some time or another, have to give up a good player because the cap constricts them. Well, it happens.
When you have to pay Aaron Donald, you can understand you have to sacrifice players. And it wasn't just him. Remember, they traded Robert Quinn to the Dolphins, too.
Right.
It wasn't just Ogletree.
And, you know, it was a little bit of a surprise to me because I truly did not recall this at all when he said they brought in Mike Singletary to do a little bit of the coaching with the defense, and he said that Singletary was just enamored with the guy.
Yeah, he was on that Rams coaching staff.
I did not remember that.
Training camp. I remember, I believe, on Hard Knocks, if you remember, the Rams were showcased one season. It was, what, two seasons ago? And I remember Singletary having some airtime on that program.
That's not a bad recommendation to have. He was obviously secondhand, but giving us a very favorable Singletary review.
Well, based on what Dave McGinnis said about Alec Ogletree, it reminds me a lot about what we heard about John Beeson when Beeson came to the Giants. I mean, very similar character traits. I'm not trying to say that he's going to be John Beeson, but the way that Beeson conducted himself, the expectations.
Leadership.
What he was expecting to bring to the locker room. It reminds me a lot about how people talked about John Beeson. Problem that held Beeson back was obviously durability. Ogletree, if you look at, since he came into the league in 13, he had that one season in 15 where he was limited to four games, and he was placed on IR in October. Outside of that, we're talking about a player that's played at least 15 games every single season outside of that.
Well, the other big difference besides the relatively clean injury slate is that Ogletree's also younger than Beeson
26
was
years old. No
when
doubt.
He
yes.
got to the Giants.
Correct.
So he's got two things going for him that unfortunately for Beeson he did not have.
Not as much wear and tear on the body
at
this point in terms of when he's coming to the Giants. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So you just heard from Dave McGinnis, who's worked with Alec Ogletree. We're going to open up the phone lines. You want to tackle Jonathan Stewart. You want to tackle Alec Ogletree. We'll get into it all in terms of the Giants' three official free agents, Teddy Williams being the other that they made official on Wednesday. Let's head to the lines. Pyrex is in Queens. Pyrex, what's happening?
How you doing?
All right. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, man.
Good afternoon to you. Hi. So what do you have for us?
Well, the Honey Badger just got cut, and I'm not too familiar with cap room. You know, I love the Ogletree signing. I love the Nate Solder signing. But I was wondering, trying to get a little bit of insight on, do we have the money to sign Mathieu? Because it's going all over the internet, all over everywhere, that we're that the Giants are the main team that should go after him, but do we have the money to do that? Or that's the thing. I don't know. I'm not too familiar with capital.
Well, you have to understand, first of all, the reason why there's a lot of speculation. And Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger you're referring to, is because he was with James Betcher, the Giants defensive coordinator in Arizona. So immediately, when a free agent is let go, or a player is let go, I should say, Pyrex, the speculation always turns to, well, where are his former coaches? Where are his previous connections? Because the NFL is about relationships. Now, with the same thing being said, I mean, Todd Bowles was his defensive coordinator when he first came into the league with the Cardinals, and Todd Bowles is the head coach of the Jets. So, I mean, if you want to connect the dots with the Honey Badger, I probably could bring up three or four other teams where he's had some relationship with a coach or a player, and we could say, well, why isn't the speculation turning to that team as well? I don't know if there's a whole lot to run with just because people are chatting on Twitter. I mean, that to me is purely speculation.
And if I could only add my two cents, we have no idea what the asking price of the player is.
Correct, yeah.
And without that, it's impossible. Possible to ever comment as to whether or not anybody can afford him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I feel like he can go to like a non-contender and they'll pay him a lot more money than we can.
Well, it depends on what the player, to Paul's point, what is his priority? I mean, sometimes you hear a player wants to go to an instantaneous contender. Sometimes a player is in it about the money. Now,
He does want to go to a scheme or a coach.
Correct. So, I mean, there's three different directions that you could head in. Now, once again, this is all speculation and all based on what we've heard with reports. I mean, the report was that one of the reasons why the Cardinals let him go was because they needed him to take a pay cut and he didn't want to take that. Now, does that mean that money's priority number one? I don't know. I mean, your guess is as good as mine at this point, but right now we're operating with very limited information to know what direction he wants to take now that he's a free agent.
Yeah, well, the Giants are already recruiting. Alec Ogletree tweeted him, told him to come to the Giants. And
I think a lot of players are recruiting him across the NFL. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true. Absolutely.
Come to the Giants. We're going to be the number one defense. That's what he told them on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay. A good selling point.
I really feel like if the Honey Badger was on came to the Giants, we would really be, I mean, the defense would be looking.
You know what? He could add a lot to a lot of defenses, but just remember, as loud as Twitter is, George Washington is often louder.
Yes.
Thank you.
Pirates, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Ken in New Jersey. Ken, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing? I got a real quick question, or actually a statement. Should Giants fans be concerned about Nate Solder becoming Josh McDaniels 2.0? I'm really concerned because I didn't see him sign yet, and it's actually frightening. But that's all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ken. Appreciate the phone call. Well, nothing is official on that front. So, once again, that's the game of speculation, just like what we were talking about with the Honey Badger.
You know, I would only say this. There are a lot of logistics involved from the time that agents talk to people on the phone and they do whatever it is that they have to do to reach the parameters of an agreement or even reach an actual agreement. But then you got to get the player on the plane. He's got to be able to make his travel arrangements. He's got to get into town. You don't know where he's coming from. You don't know what the airline schedule is. Then he's got to make it to town. Then, of course, here's the other thing you have to remember. There's physicals. Every single player who reaches a deal with an NFL team over the phone during the legalized talking period is then going to have to visit that team and undergo a complete physical to make sure that the medical staff checks off on the player before anybody executes paper to dotted line. So if you're asking me just from a structural perspective why sometimes there is a day or two delay or hour after hour delay as you're sitting there waiting for why didn't that deal become official yet, these are logistics that vary from instance to instance, and it doesn't necessarily mean that anything has fallen apart. It just means that the process has to be completed.
Well, and that's one of the big reasons why the Giants won't officially announce anything with any player until that player actually signs a contract.
Correct.
It's for protection purposes, and I know a lot of people are referring to what happened with the Indianapolis Colts head coaching search, but, I mean, that also is a rare occurrence.
It's not rare.
Something that happens. Granted, it's happened with some free agents before.
It's happened.
Frank Gore, I remember the rumors where he was going to go to the Eagles, and then all of a sudden things changed. So it's not that it can't happen, but it's more a rare occurrence than it is a regularity.
I think it happens more in college basketball with head coaches than it does anything else, where guys wind up saying they're going to do something and then they back out. Bobby Cremins was a very famous one.
Yes.
Wally Massimino was another very famous one. Those things do happen, so I'm not going to tell you that it's not, you know, possible. Anything's possible, but there are, the bottom line, there are logistical reasons why sometimes it takes a day or two for the contract to be executed. That's all.
I didn't know where you're going with that. I thought you were going to say college basketball players changing their mind initially. That's what I was anticipating. I thought you had a little zinger there, but you went in the direction of the coaches with the legitimacy of the contracts.
Well,
okay. No, I didn't know where you were going to take that. So, but once you said it, now I know exactly where you're going. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Middle. Thanks for tuning in to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Oren is in Virginia. Oren, what's happening?
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Hi.
Doing all right, Oren. What do you have for us?
Man, I'm just so excited about Nate Solder, man. We finally got a left tackle. I don't care how much he spent on it, but I'm just like, man, but I still want us to get offensive linemen in the draft and still try to see if we can work something out with Justin Pugh.
Well,
and
go ahead, Oren. Yeah.
And I also feel like if we could get Tyrann Mathieu paired up with Landon Collins and Jack Rabbit and stuff, that could be a really good defense. And they also said that he's not really – it's not about the money. He's not really looking for the money. He's looking for a good place he wants to play. He actually Tyrann Mathieu spoke about that.
All right, I didn't see those comments, but listen, anything's possible right now. I'm sure he's exploring his options, and he's determining what he thinks is best fit.
And also, guys.
Sure, go ahead.
Also, I know Paul doesn't agree with this, but I feel like we have to take, if Sam Donald is there, the pick, we have to pick him up. Or even Josh Rosen, I feel like, because the running back class is so deep in this draft that we don't have to go out that, and it's just so good to lease. I'd rather, even if Davis Webb is our future, it's always good to be safe, where we can eventually trade one of the quarterbacks if they're that good. And a team will want to take that. Because quarterbacks always, everybody always needs quarterbacks.
Well, you know, and again, I understand the point of view. I mean, I'm on the other side of that fence, but you certainly are within your right. We can agree to disagree on that. And the bottom line is, neither you nor I, as I've said to some of the folks on Twitter, we're not in the chair to make that decision. You know, when it's time to put the card up to the podium, Dave Gettleman's going to be the one making the call. And for his sake, because he's brought in to get this franchise on the right track, I just hope he makes the right decision.
Well, to your point, Oren, though, I mean, that doesn't mean you have to go in the direction of quarterback, though. I mean, you could argue that maybe there is another position that warrants the number two overall pick, like an offensive lineman, for example, like Quentin Nelson. I'm just throwing out a name. I mean, just because you don't agree that running back is worthy at number two, which I understand, your argument is there's some depth there, and I think there's validity to that. You could say, well, maybe there's another position where there's not nearly as much depth, where the Giants could use some help, and they want to use the number two pick there. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a quarterback just because it's that high up in the draft.
I'm just saying because Eli Manning is getting up there in age. And he's not like – and I still believe he can still play. I just believe that I think it's time that they at least get someone – like we can do like the Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers situation where when Brett Favre wanted to retire, Aaron Rodgers was right there to step right in. Like, we get that kind of situation where we're not like the Eagles and the Redskins having bum quarterbacks come and play for them, and then, like, you know, our season is terrible. We're considered one of those bad teams and stuff. I want to actually have, like, I want us to be winning and winning, you know what I'm saying? We got Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard. We got all that talent. We got to take advantage while we do now, just in case Eli Manning eventually has to retire and stuff like that. Yeah, but that's it. That's all I really wanted to talk about. Thank you, guys.
All right, Oren.
Okay.
Appreciate the phone call.
Yeah, there are many ways to get the team better. And, of course,
yeah.
I think the thing that I don't understand by most of the folks who are demanding a quarterback at number two, and I like to razz them on Twitter and have fun with them because I get it. You know, look, it's sports, folks.
Sports entertainment. We're not talking life and death. Yeah.
We're not talking about nuclear warheads here. It's sports. So we have to be able to have some emotion, passion, razzing, little jabs. It's all in good fun. The one thing that I don't understand about the folks who want the quarterback at number two is that the mandate, or at least the anticipation from owner John Mara was, and it was his words, expect the Giants to be good in 2018. And that is why they're sticking with Eli Manning. Whether or not you like that, that's the decision they've decided to make. Once you've made that decision that you're trying to retool on the fly and get this team back into playoff contention now with that veteran quarterback, once you make that decision, then you have to be consistent because A goes to B goes to C. The chain must be continuous. And it doesn't make sense if you're planning to put the team into playoff contention, if you're planning to turn them around right away, and then you tell the veteran quarterback it is still his job, it makes little sense to go so far off that track and then say, we're going to draft a quarterback for 3 years from now. When you have to do now everything you can do within your power to get immediate help to follow through on the roadmap that you have designed. That's the logical part that I really have trouble with when it comes to the people who are demanding a quarterback at number two. Because that part of it does not make sense. You know, the owner says, this is what we're going to do. We're driving from East Rutherford to Secaucus. This is the car we're using. Well, then, folks, you gotta take the turnpike. You know, you don't swim across the swamp with a boat. You know, this is the course that they've determined they're going to go by. You have to make decisions that comply with the course. That's where I have trouble with the logic. And I don't see, again, I guess I'm going to agree to disagree with folks, but there's not a lot of logic there.
Well, I mean, I think you can achieve both simultaneously because, I mean, we've had these conversations before. To me, the draft is not just about 2018.
It's no, it's not. That. But your overall scope, you have to have an overall direction. And if the direction has been, we're making two significant moves to turn it around now in terms of we're going to sign certain free agents with a certain GM, and then your third significant move is we're sticking with the veteran quarterback. If you're making those specific moves, you're basically playing with a square peg. Now you've got to put things in square peg holes. Well, it doesn't make sense to try to put those square pegs into a circular hole. So if you can maximize that quarterback's chances to win this year at the expense of something that's going to be some years down the road, you have to do it because you've made that decision.
No, and I completely understand what you're talking about, but if you just look at free agency, what Dave Gettleman's done over the last day, he brought in Jonathan Stewart, who is a veteran running back who's already had 10 seasons
right.
in the NFL.
So he's not here for three years down the road.
I am agreeing with you. He's not necessarily a long-term plan. He's a guy you plug in, you hope he's productive, improvement of the offensive line, you have some production on the run game. Alec Ogletree, the acquisition of him, Paul.
It is prime now.
26 years old. But also,
it is prime now,
but also a guy that's under contract that you can argue is not just
a one-year rental, though.
But I don't look at him as a one-year rental like Jonathan Stewart, who's just here for maybe 1 or 2 years.
Nor do I.
So
but
you
that's
can
a,
build around him.
Sure you can, but that's a bonus. It's a bonus if you can do what you need to do, stick to the roadmap, and then at the same time, which is what you want to do, the best case scenario is that you're building for now but also protecting yourself for the next 3 years. That's the best case scenario. You can do both. But in this particular case, my strong opinion is you take the quarterback at two, you're giving up your primary function, which is to try to win now.
Well, but I mean, listen, I think it depends on what happens with the rest of free agency. Who's to say that they can't necessarily bring in a few other playmakers? You know, nobody's expecting Hall of Famers, but once again.
How much room?
No, you got to be realistic. I'm not disagreeing with you there. But,
they've made their splash.
But remember,
their
also,
big splash,
I think what a lot of people get caught up in the NFL is you always look for the team that gets the biggest names over the course of free agency, and how often does that translate to necessarily wins?
No, it's who gets the biggest value that
correct.
Provides
so,
wins.
So just because they're not necessarily big names doesn't mean that it won't make a significant impact where you can get a team back into playoff contention. I think when John Mara said those comments, and this is my personal opinion, I don't know what he was necessarily thinking or what his mindset, I think part of his rationale, Paul, was also he looks at the current roster and realizes that a lot of the key playmakers were hurt in 2017.
Yes.
So is it a stretch to say that if Beckham comes back healthy and Shepard is able to stay on the field for a majority of the season, that production will then increase and hopefully translate to wins?
Okay.
I think that's part of the rationale that even Dave Gettleman is probably thinking,
and
too.
I'm going to use your line of thought to actually enhance what I just said, because guess what? You don't know if Odell Beckham is going to be here beyond this year.
Okay.
Or how much time he has left.
Well, I'm
after...
looking at it more for 18, though,
okay.
to your point.
Okay. But that's the point. Okay, you're playing for Eli for this year, for Odell Beckham for this year, for Landon Collins for this year, for several high-priced defensive free agents that you brought in a couple of years ago because they're in the prime of their careers still, and the back ends of their contracts means you don't know how much longer they're going to be here. 3 years from now, this defense may not even have more than two or three starters still on it because that's the way it works in the NFL. Sometimes it only takes 3 years to overturn the entire roster. So if you're going to sit here and say, oh, you know, I got to take the quarterback at number two for 3 years down the road, well, guess what? 3 years down the road, you don't even know who 80% of the players on this roster may be.
Correct. Yeah, but if you
got... So what's to say?
Well, but you could argue if you have the quarterback, that's a good starting point. Meaning, one less thing you got to worry about to go out and find and spend money on.
At the expense, first of all, at the expense of abandoning what you're trying to do now, because that's what it's going to be. And then the other problem is, too, if you have the good quarterback, well, let me ask you something. How do you think Archie Manning felt with those New Orleans Saints all those years when he was one of the premier quarterbacks
well,
and everybody
talked
about
talent around the quarterback. You
right.
don't have to convince me. Listen, I'm one that argues that all the time.
So there's a real good chance that in 3 years when this roster is totally overturned, you won't have any idea what it looks like. And how are you going to feel then, like the Giants have for the last 5 or 6 years, where they had the quarterback and didn't have a whole lot else?
Well, I turned to the Chiefs. Now, the Chiefs were a playoff team, so it's a little bit different. But Kansas City last year, Paul, took Patrick Mahomes in the first round. You could have made the argument they could have drafted somebody else that would have come in and played all 16 games instead of the final regular season game. And maybe that gets them beyond Tennessee out of the first round. Is that a stretch? So, I mean, they chose simultaneously to worry about short-term and long-term. And then a year later, they wind up handing Patrick Mahomes the starting reins. So I think we've seen teams do it both ways.
It's a lot easier to do that if you're coming from 6, 7, 8 wins.
The mindset is different.
You can do it. But if you're coming from 3 wins and your owner
and
says, we expect to be good this year, no. It's... The luxury of being able to play both sides of that fence.
No, and I get that.
You don't have as much work to do that with.
But if you were to ask me to look over that Kansas City roster heading into last season, I could point to a variety of positions that they could have utilized a first-round pick at. I mean, they lost Eric Berry, remember, in the season opener? They had down a Pro Bowl safety right off the top. They lost a number of other players throughout the course of the season. If they used that first-round pick on somebody else... Even though they were in the luxury of knowing they were coming off the playoffs, you could say that maybe changes
and
how the season plays out.
Here's where you're dropping the ball. Let's say at number two, they trade out and they get 4 picks, and 3 of those guys immediately help them this year, and they make the playoffs. Well, guess what? Every one of those picks is still going to be around for the next 4 years. And if they're any good and they help make the playoffs this year, they're going to help you be a contender for the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, now you're changing the criteria of the
conversation, but
you're talking about trading out of number two.
Well, because
I'm talking about if you were to just stick with two and take a player. I mean, that's what we were having the conversation.
So you take Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
And if Saquon Barkley is supposed to be as good as most people think he's going to be, if he's really an impact player, don't you think that Saquon Barkley is going to help the Giants for the next 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Even if we go with John's thought that the running back is done in 6, there's a good chance that for next six years, Saquon Barkley is going to help the Giants probably years after Eli Manning retires. So then you have actually helped yourself in both ways. The only way you haven't helped yourself in both ways is if you take the quarterback at number 2.
I don't disagree with you. No, I'm on the same page
there. So logically, you can understand why that side of the fence doesn't make sense. I understand people want to do it. It simply doesn't comply with the logical path that the team has already mapped out. That's the point.
No, and I get that. But once again, I still think you could achieve both simultaneously with logic behind it, where it's not a stretch to say
hard to do when you're coming off 3 wins. That's all I'm saying.
Well, meaning the luxury is not there like the Kansas City Chiefs, and I get that.
And, of course, we're also ignoring the fact, and I got to throw it in here, Davis Webb is sitting in the wings.
Of course. That's something you got to take into consideration.
And if you believe, as I do, that you can win with Davis Webb in the course of the next 2 years, whenever it is that Eli retires – then the number two quarterback pick becomes even more illogical.
But remember, Davis Webb was drafted by the previous regime, and that's not that nobody said anything good about Davis Webb that's currently in here, but that does change the dynamics a little as well.
Understood.
201-939-4513, the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right, Len.
Hello, Len.
What do you got for us?
Good, good, good. Good, nice couple of days. Feeling a little better about the team. And, of course, I think that's one of the prime incentives of the free agent period. From a public relations standpoint, that's probably true in 32 cities. There's people feeling pretty good today. I'm feeling more confident that this is a reload rather than a rebuild. You know, we'll have to see what happens, but that's probably true all around the league as well.
Well, every team who gets a player during this week gets that player because they wanted that player and thinks that player makes them better. Like you say, Len, it's kind of obligatory.
Yeah, and then the fans feel better about it and so forth, but we'll see what happens. But I feel pretty good about these signings. Let me ask you a question about the guard. You know, left guard, and if he's going to start on this team, I hope it's at left guard. You know, I remember back when we signed Schwartz, and he'd made his mark as a left guard, and then we immediately moved him to right guard. Of course, there were extenuating circumstances. The guy got hurt and so forth more than once. But I hope we keep him at left guard. And if we do that, does that mean that Jerry – is he in a battle with Jerry, or does that mean that Jerry slides to right guard, back to right guard where he was? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, first of all, the guard that – I don't know who you're referring to. I mean, because they didn't officially sign anybody that plays that position. So
yeah, okay. I got you. Yeah. Well, the guy from Jacksonville who, Coughlin replaced this guy with Norwell. He became expendable. The Giants signed him, and he looks like he's probably going to be an upgrade. He has started, in the league, so we'll see what happens. I was just wondering whether or not that means – he's in competition with Jerry at left guard, or whether Jerry slides back to right guard.
Well, I remember a lot of reasons why some of those players moved around, Len, to your point, was because of injury. So, you know, what happened last year, I don't know necessarily is an indication of what's going to continue into this season. I think a lot of it depends on what the new offensive line coach feels and any new personnel they bring in, who's more suitable to play on what side. Plus, you know, let's see what happens with the future of Justin Pugh. You know, that's another one that you got to take into consideration. I think it's way too early to determine who's best fit for what side. I think at this point, the goal is to bring as many players in for the sake of competition so you could determine, who is going to be the most suitable for what side.
Yeah. Just and asking your opinion, Lance and Paul, on this one.
Yeah.
Where do you think it's most likely Flowers competes?
Well, once again, I mean, it depends on who they bring in and what the new offensive line coach feels is best suitable for Ereck Flowers. I mean, at this point, to remove somebody from one side and plug him in on the other side, just, once again, it's hard to operate without knowing all the pieces of the puzzle at this point.
Yeah. You know what, Len? I was jumping ahead a little bit and trying to formulate in my mind, if you put it down on a piece of paper, what is the offensive line look like?
Here's what I will tell you. Len, Football 101, and it was George Young's philosophy, and as you know, I quote the man very often because of my reverence for him.
Right.
Very simply put, when you have an offensive tackle, left tackle is harder than right tackle, so you like to see if he can play left. If he can't play left, then you move him to right. If he doesn't work out there, then you move him to guard. Okay? Yeah. And you see if he works out there. And that's the progression. And if if he can't produce for you there, then it's time to get another player.
But you remember? And that's very logical, and actually it's the way I was thinking too. I was just trying to get something, trying to get something down on paper.
He's going to be one of their best five in September. That's the bottom line. He's going to be one of their starting five in September somewhere. And if you remember, William Roberts didn't work out well at tackle and became a Pro Bowl guard.
Yeah, we just don't know the five at this point. That's why it's hard to say.
Ereck Moore.
Ereck Moore didn't work out very well at all. Period.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Starter workouts. New coaches are allowed to bring their team in 2 weeks before everyone else in terms of starting the off-season workout period. Have the Giants made any decision? Are we talking April 1st or April 15th?
Well, they haven't officially announced any specific dates, but you're 100% right. When you do have a new head coach, you can start earlier than the rest of the teams.
Yeah.
That's NFL rules.
Whether they made that decision. Yeah. All right, one more minute and help me with this. The only signing I don't really understand, and I hope it works out for us, is Stewart. Where does he – the money is – what the money should be for a guy like that, but I'm not sure where he fits. I mean, is this a guy? He's not going to play specials for us. I mean, where does he fit then in a rotation? Not known as a pass catcher. I'm not going to say he can't catch, but not known as a pass catcher.
Carolina didn't ask him to do that.
Probably a heck of a blocker. I mean, can you see where he fits, Paul?
I mean,
talking about Jonathan Stewart.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In terms of where he fits.
I thought you were talking about Gallman.
No, he was talking about Stewart.
Because I think Gallman, it's obvious where he fits. Stewart to me is a mentor for the room.
Okay.
He's what Rashad Jennings was, or what Rashad Jennings became. He's a mentor for the room. He'll compete for carries. He'll compete for touches. But he's a pros pro who's going to help some of these young guys become better pros. Look, there's one thing I want you to understand about the all of these transactions that we have read about regarding the Giants in the last few days. What do you notice about them, Len? There's a common thread. Almost all of them have been on playoff teams.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. I guess this past year the Cardinals weren't. If Martin, in fact, winds up, did we see an official on that? So if and when he does sign, if that becomes official, they were not a playoff team, but they were a bona fide top 10 defense.
So you're
talking about players who are coming into the locker room who all have some type of very good winning pedigree on them.
Yeah, okay. So they've been in winning locker rooms, Paul, and they understand what it's all about.
I think that's a big deal, Glenn. I don't think you should underestimate that.
I agree. I'm just trying to figure out, the guy's maybe going to get 6-8 touches a game the way it looks like it's going to work out.
Maybe he does, but his impact may be felt in other ways.
I mean, listen, he can still be used as an early down back, which he was utilized in Carolina, and he also, remember, has connections to Mike Shula, who's the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
So the familiarity, the leadership component, some teams value that in terms of helping to develop some of the younger backs. So, I mean, if you're looking for, him to come in and give you 15 to 20 carries, I don't see that happening. But I don't think it's a stretch, Len, that they use Stewart on some early down work in terms of, first or second down, and then mix in Gallman with that.
I just can't stress the character thing enough, because Dave Gettleman mentioned that was a critical element for him. He wanted character guys. I think that's what we're seeing here.
Well, coming off of last year, I can understand that, because that locker room from afar, from my vantage point, looked like it really was a mess. And we need some guys in there to say, hey, here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do to win. Hey, you got time for one more?
Real quick, what do you got?
If we move to a 3-4 defense, if it looks like that's the direction, and it looks like that's the direction we're going to, it'd be logical then that instead of carrying 6 linebackers, we're probably carrying 8. And instead of carrying 8 or 9 defensive linemen, we're probably carrying 6. Is that the shift in the numbers that we're really looking for about 8 linebackers if we're really going to play a 3-4?
Len, I think it's dangerous to label any guy in the Betcher system. Let's just say Kareem Martin is here. Do you know what his measurements are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, listen, I can't wait for all this to start. If for no other reason, then I'm anxious to get the answers to some of these questions.
Let me hold on a second. Hold on. I want to make a point here. This is important. If Kareem Martin does in fact make his way into the building and sign, he's listed at 6'6", 272.
By anybody's
definition, he's a defensive end. But technically, with the Cardinals, he was listed as a linebacker. So does it matter what you list him as?
No, it doesn't. Yeah, well, and they converted him, too. You know, they utilize this skill set.
But does it matter?
No, it doesn't. Well, here's the other thing that I was going to add. Len, you have to understand, if you go back and look at Betcher's scheme in Arizona, they ran
right.
the base defense about 30% of the time. And then you had Dave McGinnis, who we had on earlier, says in today's NFL, you're running your nickel defenses anyway because you got to contend with three
True.
Wide receivers. So whether
True.
It's a 3-4 or 4-3, you just want to make sure you have versatile players on the roster. I mean, to get bottled down in, they need 8 linebackers now instead of 6 or 7 because they're flipping how many linebackers are out there.
You know what the problem is?
I don't think there's much value.
The problem is
that.
The NFL has number requirements for positions. They tell you that certain positions can only get certain numbers. That's the only place that this matters. Because when Betcher's defense gets on the field, they're going to be all over the place. And he doesn't give a crud where they're playing, who's blitzing, who's not, who's covering. The league cares about those numbers and a position clarification. Betcher does not.
All right.
Well, that
appreciate.
Sounds like it's going to be fun to watch, Paul.
It's going to be a headache to do film work on. Thank you.
All right, Len. Appreciate the phone call. Let's head back to the lines. Jason is in Maine. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right, Jason. What do you got for us?
All right. Just two things. Of course, Lynn kind of touched on one of them, but I know it's not official, but is there anything that you guys can at least tell us about Patrick from the Jaguars? Was he started this year for them? Is there anything more you can tell us about him?
Well, as a player, you talk about with Jacksonville, he was a starting guard for them.
I mean,
that's what you're looking for.
Momé, I believe is how he says
Omame.
It, right?
Omame. Omame.
All right, Omame. I gotta make sure I get that right if he does, in fact, wind up signing here. He is an above-average run-blocker pass protector, okay, who, as I explained on WFAN a short time ago, Tom Coughlin wants a dominant offensive line. He just doesn't want a good offensive line in Jacksonville. He wants a dominant offensive line. So for him, he has upgraded to a mega contract in going to get Norwell because he wants an absolutely bulldozing, bludgeoning, crunching offensive line. For him, anybody who was adequate or good enough was not going to do the job because they already got far into the playoffs with that. He's trying to take the next step. So he has upgraded to the Pro Bowler, Norwell. If you're the Giants and you have had a subpar offensive line, which I think we all believe to be the case, well, what's the next step? You're not going from subpar to dominant in one shot. What you're doing is you're looking for any upgrades that you can get your hands on. And so that's how I would explain it to you. He is not a dominant offensive lineman, but he is an offensive lineman who is adequate and certainly starting on a playoff team has proven that he can play in this league. And so if you're the Giants and you have an opportunity to grab a player who is an upgrade, even though he's not a Pro Bowl player, you certainly want to take a look at him. How's that?
Sure.
How's that for you?
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay. The only other thing is, if we were, I guess I'm just wondering, if we were to get Barkley, the guys that we would have right now on the roster, are we still lacking a guy? Because I know we don't, I don't even know if I've ever seen Eli run a quarterback sneak. So on those third goals at the one.
No, you've seen.
You know, where you need that big guy, like the guy that the Eagles got last year. I hope
you're talking about LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount.
Are we still lacking that guy in a running back? And I'll just take that off the air.
All right,
thanks,
Jason.
Guys.
Appreciate the phone call.
Go ahead, Lance.
Well, Jonathan Stewart to me is a tough guy. I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit for
his
toughness
tough
in terms of picking up a yard or two. I think he certainly can assume that role. Listen, we talked about the big running back going back to last offseason. This is not necessarily a brand new conversation.
I targeted Blount last year.
Correct.
You remember
we
that.
We were talking about LeGarrette Blount as a potential free agent. I mean, are they lacking that? Personally, I think Orleans Darkwa was more than capable of moving a yard or two forward.
You don't know what his status
is. No,
he's
I know he doesn't. No, but what I'm saying, he was on the roster last year.
I will say this. Even Darkwa's frame, he was not the typical big, large-framed power back that the gentleman's talking about.
And I get that.
You know, he's a scaled-down version.
But I still don't think it's asking too much for a player like that to pick up a yard or two. If that's what obviously the goal of the call was. The goal of the call was that big goal line back that you put in
right.
with your big package and you push the line forward. I don't think that asking Darkwa to do that is too much. Now, the execution wasn't there last season, and there was a lot of other factors that played a role into that, but I don't necessarily think you need a mammoth guy to achieve that.
Well, right now, they just don't even have Darkwa. So they got to figure out what they're going to do, whether or not they're going to bring him back or they are going to go for someone else. So you're right. At the moment, they don't have a guy. The caller's right. Right now, they don't have one. Although Stewart can be tough, they don't have the big power back that the gentleman's talking about. In terms of Eli, I was laughing because we've seen Eli attempt to slide. When he runs around, it's, and I use that term loosely, it's not very pretty. But I have been screaming about the quarterback sneak forever. I'd seen a stat on NBC this past season. I believe on Tom Brady's 4th-and-1 quarterback sneaks over his career, he's over 90% successful. George Young always used to say, the shortest distance between 2 points is the straight line. It is the most given, guaranteed play in football, is that when you need a yard or less, quarterback sneak is absolutely the no-brainer, and it doesn't matter if everybody in the stadium knows you're going to do it. Because of your variance in snap count and your cadence, you will have the advantage as the quarterback over the entire defense, and either you're going to get them off sides or you're going to fall forward and get that push and get that first down. It is a no-brainer for whatever reason, and I've asked so many people over the years since Eli's been here, why do we not see that with the Giants? And it's just not something they wanted to do. Is it because that they're afraid Eli's going to get hurt? I don't know. Is it because they have never had a true mammoth overpowering center? Maybe. Because over the years, the Giants have always had a smaller style of center. Maybe that's part of the reason. I'm trying to give you logic, folks, because the call is right. The quarterback sneak doesn't appear to be in this playbook at all. And how many times do you have to hand the ball off on a yard or less to go, and because the ball's starting 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage in the backfield, and the push isn't there from the offensive line, the running back does not get the first down, and they're forced to punt it away. Well, I get your frustration.
And the Steelers were criticized for not doing that with Ben Roethlisberger in the playoff game against Jacksonville when they were mounting the comeback. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people were putting Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, under the microscope for that. Brady and the Patriots run the quarterback sneak like it's nothing.
A ton.
It's a big part of their playbook. Got a new head coach right now, new offensive philosophy.
Maybe.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. Anything's possible. But could they utilize a more effective short yardage situation? There's no doubt about that. I don't think anybody's arguing that.
No.
Does that mean that you need different personnel to accomplish that? I think it starts in the trenches. You get a good push in the trenches. To me, I mean, we could sit here and flip a coin in terms of which running back you put back there. You give him room to operate, he should be able to pick up a yard.
Look, I got a lot of pet peeves, as you know. That's one of them. The lack of quarterback sneaks that the Giants run over the years. That is a huge pet peeve for me. So I appreciate the phone call.
Let's head back to the lines. Jason's in Virginia. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking the call. Quick question. With Cromartie leaving, I think, you know, we have a pretty big hole in the secondary that needs to get addressed either in free agency or the draft. So are there any sort of those, I don't know whether it's a hybrid player or a pure defensive back out there in free agency right now who can sort of step into that role? And then kind of congruent with that, is cornerback one of those position of values if we get stuck at the number two pick and can't move off it? According to the NFL 101 logic, does it make sense to go cornerback there? And is Fitzpatrick worthy of that pick? And I'll take all that off the line.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Fitzpatrick, who he's referring to, the corner out of Alabama. My personal opinion is I think 2 is really high for a cornerback. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. That's not to say that a team, if they don't value him, wouldn't necessarily consider taking him. But, I mean, I think Fitzpatrick at 2 may be high for any team at this point. I'd be very surprised if he goes that high. I think you could probably maximize the value of the pick if you head in another direction. I don't think it's a stretch to think that maybe the Giants could perhaps draft a cornerback to add more depth. Ross Cockrell is still a free agent. I mean, he's somebody they acquired for the Pittsburgh Steelers before the start of last season. Somebody that I thought performed performed pretty well when he was asked to come in last season. Certainly possible they may look into re-signing him. As far as the versatility, I mean, we were talking about a guy like Tyrann Mathieu earlier in the program who's now a free agent. I mean, he would fit the bill of versatility, but once again, it still comes down to finances. Do you have enough money and resources to be able to bring in a player like that? I could tell you there's a number of versatile corners slash safeties that are on the market, but that doesn't mean that the player is going to be liking what he is offered by any team. It all depends on what his mindset is. Does he want to go to a team that's an instantaneous winner? Does he want to go to a team, how they're going to utilize him? Does he want to go to a team based on, you know, where he has the best financial resources? Hard to say. I think there certainly are players out there, but I mean, I don't know what you think, Paul. I think two for a corner is relatively high based on what we've seen trend-wise.
I'm mixed on that. I think it's critical that the Giants get themselves enhancements at cornerback. There are more slot corners available in this draft than there are boundary corners, but there are plenty of those. Is it possible maybe that the Giants either can sign somebody or can draft somebody and then with their machinations that Betcher's going to use, maybe work something there and camouflage something there? For all we know, maybe he can. Look, a lot's going to depend, quite frankly, too. DRC's out of the building. Is Eli Apple going to be right? Yeah. That makes a big difference.
Well, but assuming he is, okay, if you just assume that, and obviously
I still would like to see them get some fortification.
I don't disagree with you, but you could argue that a slot corner is exactly what they would need then, because Jenkins and Apple on the outside, and then you'd want a guy that would come in and play the slot.
Well, Cockrell is more of a boundary corner. And if you believe that on a three-wide receiver set, now you're going to put Cockrell, Apple, and Jenkins on the field, who's your slot guy?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
All three of them are basically boundary guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you want to draft a player at that position and your argument is there's strong slot options in the draft, then that would fit the void.
Oh, yeah, you could. Yeah. You could. Unless if you think counting on Apple's too risky, then you really want to think about, okay, we need a guy who can play both slot and outside because, and there aren't a whole ton of guys like that, but you're going to want somebody like that if you can, the luxury, if you can have it. Because then if you're going to be strapped, if Apple doesn't work out, and now you've only got, well, Cockrell, we were talking about Cockrell, he's not even re-signed
yet. He's a free agent. Yeah.
So it's even foolish to talk about him.
You can't pencil it in. Absolutely.
So you know, they may have a desperate need for a boundary corner.
Well, or they may might think about moving a safety down towards the line, and
they did that with Antrell Roland. That was not a great idea. He played a lot of slot for them, and that was not a great idea. But
it's an option.
Again, there are months to go before they get to opening day. For Eli Apple's sake and for the Giants' sake, I hope he works out and does become a reclamation project. I think everybody hopes that happens. But if it doesn't, and there's no guarantee over the next, 5 months that he will, that changes things. I just hope that if there is a change there, that it happens in time for them to be able to address it. Because you would hate for them to be all of a sudden in July thinking everything's okay, and then something goes awry with him, and now what do you do?
Well, depth still has to be the goal.
It does have to be addressed.
No matter whether Apple is an option or not.
It does have to be addressed.
Remember, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth corner is just as important.
It may depend on how strong you need the slot or the boundary guy, depending upon what he does.
Let's head back to the lines. Don is in Fairfield. Don, what's happening?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What do you got for us?
Well, we're only 2 days here in the free agency, but it sure seems to me that Gettleman is moving a whole lot faster than Jerry Reese did at the same point of time the last couple of years. Now, it could be that Reese is more conservative, Gettleman's a little more aggressive, and that speaks to it. But I remember Reese saying there's always time, you know, it's a long time to the season between March and the start of the season, and we have time to fill in what we need to fill in. That was kind of the message I received as a fan. Now with Gettleman, he seems to be moving, you know, comparatively much, much faster to find the right talent for positions, even though we're only 2 days in. And I wondered what you guys thought of that and whether I'm just looking at this with my own hopeful eyes, or is there something to that?
I have one comment for you. Now, I'm going to make it very quick. Dave Gettleman has conviction about what direction he's going to go in. He is assertive, and he is very direct in whatever plans he has. It's that simple. It's short. It's sweet. It's to the point. Let's do this. If we're not going to do this, I'm moving on to plan B. That's it. It's business, baby. He is very, very assertive.
Yeah, I don't think the mindset is necessarily aggressive or different from any other GM. I mean, clearly, when he had his introductory press conference, he said the offensive line is priority number one. And then if you look at some of the players that were acquired, Jonathan Stewart has a connection to him. Teddy Williams has a connection to him. And Alec Ogletree is also filling a void at a position which Dave Gettleman identified as a need, which he was quoted as saying in terms of the press release when they announced the trade. So, I mean, if anything, he's targeting areas that he thinks need to be polished and shored up based on his evaluation of the roster. I don't know if it's necessarily the flipping of the switch, to your point, Don, and all of a sudden they're saying, well, you know, we envision ourselves as a Super Bowl contender and nobody else ever viewed themselves as a Super Bowl contender. You can quickly turn things around in the National Football League. I mean, the Rams, who are one of the best teams in the NFC, were hanging on for dear life the previous season. So that's not to say that that's going to happen for the Giants, but I don't necessarily think you have to have the mindset that, you know, we envision ourselves as a Super Bowl winner. He's just making moves that he thinks are best fit to fill the voids on this team. We lost him? Okay. And that's how I look at it, his vision. I think he has targeted that, and he has a direction to Paul's point. And so far, that's exactly what his moves have backed up. So that is going to wrap things up for us here on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Free agency, the new league year, well underway. We'll be back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern as well, continuing to take your calls. We'll try to answer any of your tweets off the air. It was a busy show on the phones, and we want to thank Dave McGinnis for joining us off the top of the program. If you missed that, you can catch that on the archive when it's put up later today on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.